listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. This is edition 269. And on the program this week, I'm going to be featuring a conversation that I had with Amsterdam-based author and community activist Jarmo, who's recently worked on a project called Take Back Mochem. That is a historical name for Amsterdam, and it's a Yiddish name for the city, and it really speaks to this idea historically of Amsterdam being a gathering place for communities that were displaced, for marginalized experiences, a cultural center. Of course, until today, Amsterdam really continues to project itself in the world as a space of creative expression, of being open to alternative lifestyles, to nightlife, to LGBTQ communities, and many other experiences. But the city's been hit hard with gentrification, and I think it's important to hear a contemporary activist voice about these intersecting points of crisis around displacement and gentrification in Amsterdam today. This book project is an important window into those voices and experiences, and I wanted to speak with Jarmo about the book project and his reflections on Amsterdam today. So here's our conversation for Free City Radio. Often when we think about social movement organizing histories in Amsterdam, it is a city where there's a whole period of time that's celebrated around building collective occupations and squatting. In recent years, there's been a network of activists, contemporary activists, that have been both drawing from this collective history of the city that goes back generations in a lot of ways, but also looks at the contemporary. And so, of course, Amsterdam's a city that has experienced extreme gentrification, but in recent years there's been quite a few squat actions. You have put together a publication that sort of visits some of these discussions and debates. In it, you have transcribed a lot of interviews with younger organizers and activists from different groups, feminist, anarchist collectives, squatting organizations, migrant justice groups. So it's an interesting sort of window into this moment of contemporary activism in Amsterdam. So first, could you just introduce yourself and then after that, speak about this initiative, this publication that you did, and introduce it and say why you did it at this time. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks. So my name is Jarmo. I'm from Amsterdam, born and raised here, so I'm Dutch. I'm a writer and an activist, been involved with different social movements over the last 10 years, I would say. And over the last couple of years, it has mostly had to do with squatting, the squatting movement in Amsterdam, the housing struggle more generally. So I was part of a squatting collective called Mochem Kraakt. I'm saying was because the collective doesn't really exist as such anymore. It's, I guess, transformed more into a network than a collective in a strict sense. But we did, towards the end of the COVID lockdowns, we did a couple of squatting actions. It was around the time that, at least in the Netherlands and in Amsterdam, the housing problem became a big topic on the political agenda. It's basically, we have a massive housing crisis in the whole country, but particularly in Amsterdam, housing is basically unaffordable. That's the bottom line. A lot of reasons for it, mostly capitalism too. I could keep it short, but it's a massive issue that people just can't find a home. Around the time I became active in the housing movement, to call it that, this was kind of, it was on people's radar. It was a politicized problem, which I don't know. Anyways, but we figured, a group of people that I knew we figured that just doing protests or petitioning politicians or whatever, I mean, that's not really a way to get anything done. Like, change usually requires more like radical actions, I would say. And then in Amsterdam, we have this long tradition of squatting as a tactic, as a social movement, with a lot of resources, so to speak, in that sense. And then we figured it's gonna have to be a squatting action that will like bring real attention to this, and that will put pressure on politicians or people that are in charge. So that's how I got involved. And then we decided to do some very like, so to speak, sort of high profile, very visible actions, which at that time wasn't really common. I guess we'll get into that a bit later. And I guess our point was to just raise as much attention as we could. And we did that by squatting and doing it like very much in the public eye. Yeah, and after a while, I mean, we were definitely not the only ones taking action in that way. There were a lot of other actions going on, a lot of other groups, activists that were in different ways involved in. And I guess I would call it in general this fight to reclaim the city, you know, the right to the city, that whole concept. You know, a lot of people were involved in that, and we figured it was time to place the spotlight on them, or basically on us, on the movement. And that's how we figured that it would be interesting to make a publication around that. And that became the book.
So you, Jarmo, you bring up a very key moment, which is sort of coming out of the lockdowns and a lot of the sort of systemic questions that came up during this time, and sort of systemic critiques on inequality and access to the city. So going just back to that sort of moment and why squatting actions were important for, let's say, younger community organizers and activists in Amsterdam at that time, maybe could you like give us a bit of a picture as to why and what you were all talking about right at that moment?
Yeah, sure. I'll try. It's kind of, I guess, I mean, you mentioned it before. It's like squatting movement is used to be huge in Amsterdam, and it's had really like a massive impact on the city as it is now. Like it was like the heydays of the movement were in the 70s and in the 80s. And then it continued up until the 90s and the early 2000s, and it was really, really massive. There were tens of thousands of people that were part of that movement. They were living in squats, and they were very, or not everybody, but like they were very political. Of course, you know, it wasn't just a means of providing housing for people that couldn't afford it. They enabled, I think, a lot of very, very productive encounters and interactions on a lot of topics, you know, and like all of it, of course, based on some form of anarchism or let's say self-organization. But it had a lot, I mean, there was a lot of crossover, I think, with feminist movement, anti-racist movement back in the day. I mean, you know, like all sorts of anti-capitalisms going on. And there was a strong connection, or like it was also like a very important like sort of breeding ground, like it was very fertile soil also for culture, you know, for cultural production, for alternative culture, alternative places. So that means that in Amsterdam, like actually a lot of the you know, like most famous, most renowned cultural venues have their roots in the squatting movement. They used to be squatted places, and then they just became like, I don't know, you know, like more mainstream musical venues, but that's where they came from. So same goes for like a lot of social housing. You know, like the squatting movement was able to put so much pressure on the government back then that, you know, like to give them something back, they just provided a lot of affordable housing for regular people. So impact has been massive.
Just to interject, I mean, key, like really important cultural spaces, and there's many, but like OT301, the Oki Cultural Center, these sort of like really world known spaces for cinema and music were originally squats.
Yes, even Paradiso or the Melkweg, you know, like they were squatted like in the 60s or in the 70s already. So yeah, it's I think that's quite extraordinary. I don't know every city in the world, but I think this is characteristic, I think, of Amsterdam. Maybe mostly because, let's say, the presence of these places has been ongoing for decades now. You know, it's not just, I mean, of like, yeah, these places still exist. And with that, like some of the political culture out of which they arose. And I think that's really just, I think that's very important, like in general for radical politics or alternative culture or social movements to be able to reproduce, you know? Like once you lose these places, it's very difficult to connect, it's difficult to connect back through history, so to speak, to tap into that tradition that once existed. Like, it's very difficult to get that back once the chain is broken, so to speak. And I think in Amsterdam, we got really close, or, I mean, our opponents, our enemies, you know, the politicians, the capitalists, the gentrifiers, you know, I think they got quite close to breaking the chain, but they never really succeeded, you know, not entirely, in the sense that, you know, like at least on the radical left, like this memory of the squatting movement and what it meant and what it has done, like was preserved, which means that it was like, in a way, like a repertoire, a sort of an action repertoire and a culture also that we could still tap into. And I think that's the crucial thing, you know, like we weren't the first ones to think, you know, oh, we're gonna squat because we want to do something radical. No, like there were like, That's the thing that we could do, or could even could imagine, because it was already part of our political imaginary. And there were a lot of people that were very experienced and a lot older than we were, you know, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s even, that could help us do that, could help us pull it off. So I think the only thing that we did differently with the collective that I was part of was that we were like extremely visible and loud about our action, because like the major change in the Netherlands, like in legislation, is that squatting was banned, legalized in 2010, which is maybe strange to hear for people who are not aware of our particular context in the Netherlands, but. Just to be clear, like squatting wasn't actually illegal. That made it easier, of course, for the movement to grow back, like way back when, but like it wasn't illegal. There were like some constraints, some legal, like, you know, but yeah, like it wasn't as an activity as such, it wasn't illegal until 2010, then it was made illegal. And that's really when the movement suffered its biggest blow. And it's also like to be, you know, like, to be clear, like it hasn't really recovered since then. Like it used to be way bigger than it is now. But another major consequence, I think, of that ban was that squatters became way more cautious, and I think they retreated a little bit into their own scene, where they felt a little bit more safe, because it just became more risky to do squatting actions. Which also meant that there were fewer like high profile big actions that drew people into the movement, so the movement started to shrink. And then what we did, that was the major difference, is that we were like, you know, like this is not gonna help us in the end, not in the long run, you know. If we're gonna like hide or just do small actions all the time, like nobody's gonna know, nobody's gonna see why this matters, why this is important. So we're like, fuck it. You know, chances are we're going to get evicted very soon, but we're just going to squat a huge building in the middle of the center of the city of Amsterdam. We're going to put a huge banner on it. We're going to go on, you know, on Instagram, on TikTok. And this shit was like not done in the movement, but we have to get our message out, or nobody's going to know what we're up to. And I think that gamble paid off, in the sense that, yeah, I think we made squatting or like maybe radical politics, direct action, less secretive and more accessible to people that weren't already part of that movement. Yeah, and that was really our philosophy. Like, we have to, this movement has to grow, otherwise it's gonna die. But for that to happen, you know, like, we need more people, but then they need to understand what we're doing, which means that we have to be visible, we have to be clear, we have to be accessible, and we cannot just speak the same old anarcho, you know, lingo that only we understand. You know?
Well, Jarmo, in this publication you've worked on, I understand there's a number of people involved. It goes into that. It goes into how things happened, even on a technical level, on a physical level, but also some of the ideas and the debates. And I always really, I'm excited when I see people who are involved in social movement action, taking the time to reflect and write down and also speak to each other to document sort of the debates that go into social activism. And so you've done that for this sort of like moment that you're describing. So talk a little bit more about that process and why it was important.
The thing is that there are a lot of books and like history books or whatnot about squatting in the Netherlands. I mean, generally there's a lot of books about radical politics. You know, there's a lot of theory going around, you know, like people like reflect on activists. It's a common thing. Like, we're not the first to do it, obviously. But what we figured was that what still lacks maybe a little bit is to really start from the perspective of activists, like whatever they're doing, instead of like just reflecting on what they're doing, you know? And that was really the guiding principle of this book. We're like, we have to find a way of letting this movement speak for itself, rather than adding more, you know, like theoretical discourse on radical politics. So that was really our guiding principle in making this book, which is why we worked together with, it's a very collective, very collaborative effort, you know, like there was a sort of editorial team of which I was part, but there were really like dozens and dozens of people involved in making this book. And there were mostly collectives, activists, very few of them were professional writers. Yeah, and we really wanted to like capture the moment and the movement as it was. So that's why it's not just about squatting, but it's also about, you know, it's about the it's about queer emancipation in Amsterdam. It's about ecological issues. It's about the unhoused and their struggle. It's about illegalized migrants and how they live in Amsterdam, how they try to fight for their rights. And we really wanted to put that all together, but without, let's say, one overarching perspective or theoretical discourse or theory. Only thing that we did want to add, or I don't know, like have as a premise was, I mean, there had to be something you know, that glued all these different people or activities together. And to us, there was the right to the city. I guess that's where we started. That's, I think, the only thing that we really added, so to speak, to what people were already doing. And to be a bit more specific, I guess, like, the book is called Take Back Mokum. And Mokum is the nickname of Amsterdam. And we try to take that word back a little bit, but give it a new meaning. So, like, in our context, it's a bit of, it's kind of a bit of a nostalgic concept, you know, like it's like the traditional people would use that word for Amsterdam. But what it means originally, it's a Yiddish word. It basically means place or city. But it has this connotation of refuge or safe haven, you know, a place where the you know, the people that fled from persecution or oppression elsewhere could go and find a home, despite the fact that they were not from that place. They came from somewhere else, but they could still make it their home because it was a refuge. And that's the meaning that we wanted to give back to this word of Mokum. And then we use that as a way to imagine the city, if it was really ours, you know, like if you take back the city, if you reclaim the city, reclaim space, like, what does that mean? It cannot be a nationalistic thing. It cannot be a proprietary thing. It cannot have to do, you know, it cannot be a possessive thing. We have to think about a way that, you know, of thinking about urban space or a social space or whatever society or the world in general is something shared. And the word we came up with for that was mokum, in the meaning of refuge or safe haven. And that's how we tried to conceptualize this social struggle for reclaiming our city.
I found it really cool that in this book you have all these transcriptions of the conversations, and I also can feel in some of the conversations there's a little bit of tension that you're like highlighting inside of the movement too, which I felt was healthy. For example, the interview with the Feminist Anarchist Collective and how that relates to the larger sort of squatting movement, and then also some of the debates in the squatting movement around thinking about the layers of privilege in terms of like non-status people or people who are facing like the framework of being quote-unquote illegal, etc. Yeah, if you have any comments about that, but also if you can describe the book, like just it's basically, I find it's an interesting project also because I very much can feel that it's coming from this activist context, right? It's not going through sort of like a major institutional publisher, etc.
The book, I mean, it consists of different genres, so to speak. It's not, so there's a bunch of interviews in there, of course, but there's also essays, there's some more sort of academically inflected pieces, not a lot because we wanted to keep that to a minimum, but we wanted to make space for that too. There's a comic in there, a lot of pictures. You know, so it's like, and it's quite a lot. It's like, how many pages is it? 350 pages, something like that. So it's quite a lot. We just wanted it to be like really full. Like we wanted it to be sort of overflowing with, you know, with ideas and examples and practices, basically. So yeah, we wanted to include as much in it as we could, and also not stick to just one genre. So it's a bit all over the place, but I hope in a nice way. And yeah, it's also true that we didn't want to, I don't know, like shy away from from the conflicts that are there too. You know, not everybody agrees on everything, and also the fact that. That we don't really have any answers or solutions. We try to highlight that in the beginning too. Like that's not what we're really after, you know. Like it's not like we think that we know what has to be done. You know, we're not Leninists also in that way. Only thing that we can do is sort of provide examples of practices and explore the possibilities that you know that are inherent to them. And then what we can do is try to, you know, like work together more closely and build solidarity, and then see what comes from that. But yeah, I mean that was the whole thing. It's kind of like we were making a book about you know like autonomous and you know, like largely anarchist practices, and then we figured it would also be a bit strange to gather all that material and then just give it to a publishing house, and then just like run through you know like. Sort of finding alternatives. It's not, I mean, again, like it's not about the ideas as such or only like it's really about the practices, but it involves the production process, you know? It's a bit, there's a contradiction in there, I think, if you're just gonna gather a bunch of radical ideas and then have some kind of company like profit from that, you know, even if it's a publishing house, you know, like there are worse companies than that, but still. So yeah, we just made the book ourselves. So we designed it, we just did all the editing, whatever, like we didn't have any sort of external help in that sense. And then yeah, we basically published it ourselves. We just worked together with a small publishing house. It's a Dutch publishing house that kind of specializes in like, let's say, radical theory. But they only helped us with the distribution. Nothing else. We did I mean, we just made the book ourselves, did the promotion to the extent that we did. and they just helped us with the distribution, like to get it in bookshops. Yeah, it's really, we just thought that actually we came to realize during the process that this is actually also something that we should have more autonomy in, you know, like the infrastructure of spreading our own ideas. And then after a while, after the book came out, like the Dutch version, the first version, we kind of decided that, you know, we should set up our own publishing house. Yeah. So that's what we did. And then our biggest project was first to translate this book into English so that it became, you know, like available to more people. Yeah, now we're just still collectively working on other projects all about activism practices, radical practices in Amsterdam, but also internationally. And we're trying to, yeah, create our own infrastructure to, I don't know, amplify these voices, and distribute it ourselves, and I don't know, trying to do activism in and as publishing. That's kind of what we're trying now.
Jarmo, thanks for the conversation today.
Sure.
That was a conversation with community organizer Jarmo, based in Amsterdam. He is part of a collective called Mochrom Krat, which you heard about. Collective of squatters, activists, and artists. They have recently published a book project, Take Back Mochrom. Look it up. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. You can find us weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Friday at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.